we have to just get on without a life. I mean, we all have responsibilities that we need to attend to outwardly in terms of what presents and opportunities for engaging with others. And then it's down to us so far as we are enabled to reflect on the quality of our engagement. So anything that reflects inwardly in that respect, that takes account of motivations and states, interior states, is what is spiritual. And spiritual application is a higher form of use, but it's not detached from what's done more externally either. In fact, I think one thing with that stood out for me with logopraxis is how the external is made to actually serve the internal, which is, of course, the inversion that needs to happen. So we engage in outer life to do what we can, and something gets revealed so far as what's needing to be worked with internally in terms of our private space, at least external private space. Internal is private to what's external, but open to whatever angelic forces the Lord brings in on to bear on that. So there was this idea of the neighbor in the start of the interchapter material for section 40, where it talked about the hungry and the thirsty, and where you saw me hungry or thirsty and that sort of thing. But I was struck by the statement in 5064, which follows on from that quote from Matthew. And I haven't thought much beyond it, but it's here. So it says, by one, this is Eliot I'm reading here, by one who is hungry, thirsty, or a stranger is meant an affection for what is good and true. That's it. That's the definition given. Then the next one is, and by one who is naked, sick, or in prison is meant a recognition of what one's own selfhood or proprium is like. So there's a stark contrast. So it doesn't go into a lot of detail there, but it's pointing inwardly as to what these things are in terms of loving the neighbor internally. And in logopraxis, we often talk about the two things are through this work, we come to see who and what the Lord is in himself and who and what we are in ourselves. And it is that seeing of those two things held together that frees us from our affectional ties to what is not healthy from a spiritual perspective. So what was brought up about misery and the aspect of temptation, of course, the question that I asked there is, but what is miserable? What is feeling the misery? And I think that's, I think that's a helpful frame, because through this work, we, through our life in the world, we have built up a sense of possessing an identity. And that involves a complex series of affectional ties into patterns of feeling and thinking that really are hellish. But we are so absorbed in them and we are so identified with them as ourself that when these things start to get dislodged and come under the scrutiny of the word, anxiety and panic can start to set in, because not just in terms of our own sense of self that's being disturbed, but the sense of self that those spiritual associates have invested in things remaining as they have been. So as those things start to get loosened, there is a fear starts to arise, because it feels as though we are losing our identity, our sense of self, our life. And in one sense we are, but of course through the way the Lord manages this process by means of the word, that loss is the necessary stepping stone into, I suppose, into trusting that what he offers as a replacement is of supreme value in comparison. In comparison, the self we have drawn out of our proprial need is nothing. It's merely something that can serve for a time, and so these adjustments have to be made, and that's what temptation is. So I was taken with the last reading, if not that one, the one before, but it gave a definition of temptation, and temptation is the vastation of falsity and the consolidation of truth. That's what it is. So we spoke about how temptation at that level, spiritual temptation, the Lord comes out victorious. No one is let into that level of temptation unless the end is secured. So, but of course, when you're going through it, it doesn't feel like that. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a temptation. But what it does, the doubt and the fear and the anxieties and things that arise, allow for what is false to be seen and sloughed off, so that what is true can actually be woven into the life, into our life, and become something, take on a solid, more permanent feat. What would you say? You know, like a more solid sense of self that is grounded in the Lord. And that will have its limitations as well, because that will have to be undone at some point as new truths or new insights get integrated. So what I'm saying basically is that despair at times and misery aspect is part of the process, but it's helpful to remember that what is feeling the despair and misery is as much about those spiritual associates, and we get to feel it as if it is ourselves. So, but it's a process whereby we're being set free from what causes misery and anxiety, if you like.